This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hello there and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, the very best bit of today's show. From Friday, April the 29th, the final working day of the holy month of Ramadan. Thanks to our producer, Aiza Havilio, for putting the Bite Size together this morning. Right then, what have we got for you? Talking tech in a little while with PK Gulati, the veteran tech investor here in Dubai. He dissects the $100 million fund that Dubai has just set up for tech startups. Talking economics with Dan Richards of Emirates NBD. We are looking at the US dollar, which is at a 20-year high against a basket of currencies, and by extension, the dirhams at a 20-year high. And then finally, Helinomics, Larry Pence of Heli Dubai. Tom has a theory that there are more helicopters in the skies of Dubai at the moment, and that is an economic indicator. So we're going to hear from Larry Pence. First of all, though, let's dive straight into our top stories today. Talking about this story that we've had so many questions about, Tom, this $100 million fund set up over the past 48 hours here in Dubai. It's been driven by His Highness Sheikh Hamdan, the Crown Prince, based out of DIFC, so mainly looking at fintech. But a lot of people writing in saying, what is this fund and how do we get our hands on the cash?
Yeah, I'm one of them. Show me the money.
Well, PK is going to join us, PK Gulati. They're not just handing out 100 dirham notes on the corners of DIFC. To people like Tom Urquhart and Richard Dean, you've got to have a good idea and a business plan.
It's yet another of these great initiatives, though, isn't it, Rich, that we're hearing and we're reporting on a sort of daily basis, whether it be visa-driven, whether it be manufacturing, whether it be made in Dubai, whether it be, you know, there's no shortage of reasons for people to relocate to this part of the world, to set up your business here, etc. And it is this idea of making it more just easier, basically, to set up here. Whereas before it used to be, you know, you needed a local partner and you needed to have X amount of money and you needed this and you needed that and you needed 400 copies of your passport, etc., left, right and centre. The efficiency of setting up businesses here. And I think that goes back to one of the stories we've been reporting, which is the profitability of free zones here. They've been one of the sort of drivers in that market in recent years. And we know a number of organisations, Virtue Zone, Creative Zone, amongst others, that have really helped to sort of build that ability to set up here. And we've talked to guests here in studio, haven't we? We had the guys in from ICD Brookfield the other day talking about the demand for offices, and not just big name brands that exists already in the sort of relocation of big name brands, but also people looking to set up family offices here in the UAE. So it's obviously moving in the right direction. It's working.
I'm trying to think, because the free zone story is, just remind us, the data out over the past 24 hours is the contribution to GDP from free zones, yeah, isn't it? Here in Dubai Emirate specifically.
So the numbers are, Dubai's free zones are on track at the moment, albeit these are sort of projected figures for 2030, on track to boost GDP contribution to round about $68 billion worth of trade by 2030.
I'm trying to think. We were joking earlier on, what's our favourite free zone? You picked DAFSA, didn't you, because you like the name, Dubai Airport Free Zone. Yeah. I picked Dubai Design District. I'm trying to think how many free zones in the UAE I've had licences from in my time. And so my first job here was offshore in Garhoud. Then I came back as a freelancer and had a desk in Media City. So that's one. Then for a while, my license was in Fujairah, which was fine and worked well. And now I've got a company in Dubai Design District, but we're closing that down and moving onshore into Alkoz. I work in Media City. I've had quite a few. I mean, I'm not double figures, but I'm racking them up.
There are 40 in the UAE.
Okay.
Name them all.
Yes. Maybe in the news quiz later on with Serena Kelly.
Oh, no.
What?
Are we doing that?
Yeah.
News quiz?
Really?
Why wouldn't we be doing the news? It's Friday.
I know, but it's Friday.
Have you not been listening?
Well, no, obviously. But it's Friday after a... Can I just name the 40 free zones?
That is not a question.
Serena Kelly's with us in the studio. Morning, SK.
Morning, guys.
Can we start with Abu Dhabi? We're getting lots of questions in about changes to the COVID procedures and in particular how you use the Al Hosn app in the capital.
So they've just released an update overnight. It's the Abu Dhabi Emergency Crisis and Disasters Committee. So they've approved a return to 100% operating capacity in all commercial activities, tourist attractions and events in the Emirate. And of course, when attending those, you need the green pass on the Al Hosn app, which has also been updated as well. So if you're fully vaccinated, a PCR test will keep your Al Hosn app green for 30 days. It was 2 weeks, but that's now been extended to 30 days for fully vaccinated individuals. Anyone unvaccinated, you need a PCR test every 2 weeks for the app to stay green. And these updates come into effect today. Authorities also reminding the public it is still mandatory to wear your mask in indoor spaces, because obviously outdoors, public areas, outdoors, you don't need to wear one. But when you're indoors, you most definitely do.
Now, on a related note, Eid al-Fitr is upon us. A time for celebration. We're all looking forward to it very much. But there have been some reminders from the authorities.
That's right. And NSEMA calling for the public's support to ensure all Eid al-Fitr celebrations are held safely. So it was a media briefing. And NSEMA spokesman Dr. Taha Al-Ameri advised people, please, can you limit celebrations to immediate family members and relatives? Of course, we've made major strides as a country when it comes to the recovery from COVID-19, and that's due to everybody following the rules and regulations. He also added that the authorities, of course, are continuing to monitor the pandemic, be it locally and abroad as well. When it comes to distributing Eid gifts or presents, the advice is do that by electronic means. And of course, the green pass system on the Al Hosn app, they're saying obviously that would prove to be very helpful for events or get togethers. And practice your physical distancing, especially when you're engaging with those vulnerable groups. Meanwhile, you'll notice a fairly heavy presence probably of Dubai police around Dubai during the Eid break. That is because they're beefing up safety plans, basically more patrols on the roads, teaming up with the RTA just to make sure that monitoring traffic and road safety. And then, of course, extra security measures and personnel will be deployed at mosques and prayer grounds because you're going to see more officers patrolling the community. And just an FYI, in case you missed it, please do not forget, don't make the mistake of paying for parking during the Eid al-Fitr holidays in Dubai and Sharjah. Dubai have announced the RTA says parking is free from Saturday, April 30th until the 6th of May, which is Friday. That's with the exception of multi-storey car parks. Sharjah, no fees from the first day of Eid until Thursday, the May 5th, except blue zones. But if you do need more details, it's all available on the Aero News Centre app.
Hey, nothing like good habits, bad habits or habits in general, are there? You know, ordinarily, we come in here, we make a point of, you know, Rich actually is very good at setting an alarm so that we pay for our parking outside because we don't have the privileges afforded to certain individuals. But, so we have to pay for our parking. So I've just paid for mine.
Mm-hmm.
Forgot that it was in the garage at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah.
You did, you just said.
I literally just did it. It's so out of hand.
How many hours have you paid for?
A full day.
Yeah, full
day. Basically.
A couple of days ago, I had my wife's car. I paid parking on my car. So I've probably got a fine. The other thing I did last night.
We like this.
So we were out leaving do last night, one of our colleagues. And on the way home, I was feeling a little peckish. I don't know, about 10, 10.30, something like that. So I got my app out and ordered a burger. I got home and I'm sitting on the sofa and I'm watching the football and I'm thinking, where's my burger? You know, you check your phone. Where your rider is closed. Okay, great, fine. I'm feeling peckish now. Your rider has arrived. It's like, no, he hasn't. I'd ordered it for the office because I've got two locations on my phone. So one of our security guards did receive the burger and it's now in a fridge.
we need to find it.
Can I just say, though, this is not the first time that Richard Dean has done this, though.
Oh, yeah.
He has done this before as well.
Oh, I've ordered stuff when, yep, when I'm here and
not
yeah,
first
Starbucks
time.
Turned up at my
it's not his first
front
rodeo.
Door.
Yeah.
Oh, dearie me, Serena Kelly, thanks very much.
More details on the Aero News Centre app.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Delighted to be joined on the line by a friend of the Business Breakfast and one of the most respected technology investors in this part of the world, indeed globally. PK Gulati is a tech innovator, an angel investor, a mentor, an idea accelerator, and much, much more besides. Joins us now live on Microsoft Teams. Morning, PK.
Good morning.
Can we start off with this $100 million fund that was announced earlier on this week here in Dubai? We're getting lots of questions in the Business Breakfast studio about this. It's an initiative from His Highness Sheikh Hamdan, the Crown Prince here, so clearly very, very high level. It's mainly focused, we think, on fintech because it's down in DIFC. So a couple of questions. Firstly, what do you know about it? And secondly, how do we get our hands on the cash, BK?
Well, it's delightful news. First, it proves that Dubai is putting its money where it talks about, which is innovation. And in this case, this fund is a signal to startups and to innovators that come here, you have a chance of building a global enterprise. What I understand is this fund is actually going to be run by a professional fund manager with DIFC's input. I think it's Hambro Perks. And with their initiative and their knowledge, they will find the best places to put this money in, and that could be your startup.
Okay, so who's eligible? Is it just fintech, or is it broader than that?
I believe it'll be led from DIFC, so you may see a bigger focus on fintech, but you could also see a lot of work happening on Web 3.0 there, and more, like now we see more mashups happening. So you will see probably a bit of, edgy technologies bringing things together, like Metaverse or maybe Web3 gaming. So we don't really know yet. It's not been defined, but we will see a lot happening, especially with the FinTech Hive initiative out there.
Yeah, because the FinTech Hive has been, I would say, it's been a success so far. I mean, you think of companies that have grown out of the FinTech Hive. One of them that we know is Sawa, which is the relatively low-cost investment platform, but I could have picked other examples as well. Is it fair to say the FinTech Hive has been a success, or is it too early, really, to make that judgment?
Well, I think it's a work in progress, like everything else is, but what we see recently is this whole flurry of regulatory initiatives, like actually providing licenses to companies which usually found it more difficult to find licenses, like Tarabut Gateway got the open banking platform got a license. You saw Binance come in. So all those kind of licenses coming in the region are also giving an idea to, like, you know, people or innovators to come and actually look at Dubai as a base. And I think this is a step in that direction.
Because, of course, there's strong competition, isn't there? You mentioned Binance there, the crypto exchange. They've got a license in Bahrain, a license in Dubai, but they've also got one in Abu Dhabi as well. So there's definitely a war for talent to attract these tech startups. And, of course, Riyadh in Saudi Arabia as well, very keen to attract these startups. It's a very big market, and a lot of them are moving there.
Well, I think, it'll always be a market for, talent. Silicon Valley is fighting for the same talent too. So when you look at from that direction, I think we are in good space. Dubai has a great base. And between Dubai and Abu Dhabi, they've been able to attract some of the best startups in the region. And I think it's more the merrier. As more money comes at the base of the pyramid, more innovative ideas would get funded, would get started, and people will be tempted to take that risk to actually build what they've been trying to build for a while. That means edgy technologies, in my opinion.
Is that a bird tweeting in the background, PK? Have you got a budgie with you? Very topical. With Twitter earnings overnight, Twitter that's very topical.
I'm actually sitting next to a window, and you can hear the birds in real life.
Fabulous stuff. Let's talk about crypto exchanges. We mentioned Binance there. We had this week. What was the one that set up here in Abu Dhabi this week, Tom? Named after the Lego movie?
The Kraken.
The Kraken, setting up in Abu Dhabi Global Market. All these crypto exchanges setting up. What are you thinking about this, PK? Is this the start of a new reality, the dawn of a new reality, or is it a bubble waiting to burst?
I think it's just new acceptance. Talking about Kraken, Kraken were a part of the Global Blockchain Council, which was launched here in Dubai under the Prime Minister's office many years ago, like 2016. So Kraken were there then, but were not able to find this licensing. And I think the regulators have actually gone over the hump and have actually accepted the new reality of crypto. And I think these crypto exchanges are finding now an environment where they can actually set up. And that's why you see all these people coming here. I believe confidence has been given to them to actually be able to stably base themselves here.
To what extent have you personally invested in the crypto world? You're normally about 5 or 6 years ahead of the rest of us in seeing what trends are happening. To what extent have you invested actually buying cryptos themselves, some Dogecoin or whatever it may be, or in companies around crypto, like the exchanges or anything else like that?
Well, I'll answer it in two steps. Like, I wish I'd invested far more in crypto in 2016-17 when we started. Well, famous ones that got away. But at the same time now, I see far more innovation coming in early stage Web3 crypto companies here. And we are actively looking at them. We are actively working with a group of angel investors, for example, to actually support them far earlier. And now with this regulatory support, I believe this will increase. And I hope we'll find far more gems than we have in the past in this space.
Finally, in terms of technology sectors more broadly and the ones that you're focusing on at the moment, you mentioned edutech a couple of minutes ago, which is interesting. Why that one in particular?
What I meant was edutech.
Edgy, oh, sorry. Edutech, not edutech. My mistake. Forgive me.
So I'm looking at quite a few edgy technologies. We see a lot of work happening in VR and metaverse in general. Gaming is pretty big, and I believe UAE has a chance of becoming a center of this kind of gaming. So we would see stuff like that, in my opinion. And with opening up of the crypto and licensing, I think the merger of these technologies will bring up some really good innovative companies.
PK, always good talking to you. Appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much indeed to you and indeed the ornithological colleagues who joined and chimed in on the interview this morning. PK Gulati is a tech investor based here in the UAE.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Daniel Richards joins us now live on Microsoft Teams, senior economist, Emirates MBD. Morning, Daniel.
Hi, good morning, Richard.
Should we start with US GDP? Overnight, the numbers came out. The economy shrank in the first quarter by 1.4%. That's worse than analysts were expecting. What's the story?
Yeah, so the headline figure, it doesn't look great. Like you say, on an annualized basis, we had a 1.4% contraction. Consensus expectations had been for 1% growth. So obviously, that's a pretty clear miss. But if you drill down into the underlying drivers of that, it's not as bad as it first appears. President Biden said it was due to technical issues, and while I'm sure he'd be the first to claim it, if there's growth on the back of technical issues, I think he's got some right to say that, because really it was kind of still the disruption, I'd say, from the pandemic and the swings we've seen related to that are driving some of these swings. We saw net exports was a drag on growth as imports really surged, and also we had inventories that weren't really supporting growth after a massive surge we had in the previous quarter. So the pandemic effect is still being ironed out, but the underlying drivers of consumer demand is pretty robust. And I think when you see what happened in US equity markets yesterday, we saw some pretty strong gains. Generally, markets have looked through the headline figure and seen what has generally been a pretty strong report otherwise.
Okay, I'm selfish. I care about this mainly because of what it means for me here in Dubai and the UAE. And I look at interest rates in particular. The Fed's meeting very soon. All the hot money is on a half percentage point increase. But will policymakers look at this and think, hang on, the US economy shrank last quarter, and hold their horses on interest rate rises? Will it influence their thinking?
No, like I say, for those reasons as outlined, I think generally the underlying outlook for US economy is still pretty strong. Obviously, that trade balance is an issue. I'm sure President Trump would have had things to say about that, and President Biden has called for more things to be made in the US. But that should iron out over the next quarters. As long as the consumer remains robust, and you know, that remains the bulk of the US economy, then I don't think there's anything here to derail the Fed's plan to hike rates more aggressively. We also had some labor market data yesterday where the initial jobless claims is 180,000. That's back to kind of pre-pandemic levels. And given the strong gains we've seen in the net NFPs over first quarter, I don't think there's really anything at the minute that's going to derail the Federal Reserve's plan to hike rates, especially given that, you know, we had 7.9% inflation in the last print. It's not going to go down too quickly given what we're seeing in Eastern Europe. So all eyes, all things still point towards aggressive tightening from the Fed.
Let's talk about the mighty US dollar.
I need the dollar, 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 that's what I need. Well, I need the dollar.
Because it is at the highest level in 20 years against a basket of currencies, well over 130 against the Japanese yen. Why is the dollar so strong? Where does it go from here, Daniel?
Yeah, it's quite extraordinary what we've been seeing in FX markets recently. We're also seeing the euro at €5, sterling's under pressure. So it's a combination. I think some of it's a haven play, given the challenges we're seeing in the global economy with the ongoing lockdowns in China and the war in Ukraine. But also the fact, as I was just talking about, the US is set to tighten rates more aggressively than its counterparts in Japan especially, but also the eurozone and other major central banks aren't looking to tighten their policy rate as quickly as the US is, and that is having a knock-on effect on FX.
So, Daniel, taking all this as a whole and the various impacts having that are being exerted on the UAE economy, what's your reading for the rest of this year here?
Yeah, so obviously these can exert a drag on the US economy. The stronger dollar will affect the trade, and the higher rates also could impact consumer spending and housing, etc. But generally, our outlook is pretty strong. We expect headline growth of 5.7% this year. A lot of that's on the back of the oil sector, but we still expect 4% growth from the non-oil sector in the UAE as a whole. So not quite what we saw last year, because many of those reopening gains have already been won. But still a pretty strong outlook generally for the UAE in 2022.
What are the main risks that you're looking at for the UAE economy this year? What could go wrong?
So I guess the much faster tightening by the US, that is an issue. It is something that we are looking at in terms of the drag that could exert on the global economy. But as I was saying, you know, monetary policy here moves in lockstep generally with that of the US. So that is a key thing to be aware of, and the effect that could have on housing in particular, after we saw that very strong growth in that sector last year. We don't expect that to quite be, or well, we don't expect that growth to be repeated, but what we're saying, we don't expect a crash or a contraction, more of a slowdown compared to what we saw last year.
Now, the central bank governor of the UAE, His Excellency Khalid Mohammed Balama, is going to be watching these developments closely in the United States because, of course, as you say, our monetary policy moves in lockstep. A final thought, just a minute, on whether or not His Excellency Balama is going to be thinking, you know, pegged to the US dollar, it's been great for 40 years. Is it time to rethink it, Dan?
No, we don't see that happening anytime soon. I think the stability that gives, and with oil price and dollars still, I think the pros outweigh the cons. But obviously, there are times when the economic cycle isn't quite in chime with that of the US, and that does have effects on the local economy. But generally, I think the pros outweigh the cons.
Daniel Richards, Chief Economist, Emirates NBD. Great talk. You appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much indeed. I wish you a very warm Eid al-Fitr to you and all the team at ENBD. Dan, thanks very much indeed for your time.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
One person who will be keeping an eye on those energy prices, none more so than aviation fuel, is our next guest. Helicopters. Is it just me, or are there more helicopters in the skies of Dubai and therefore the UAE? And is that an indication of a booming economy? If people have got money to spend on using helicopters to get from A to B or for leisure tours, then surely that's indicative of a boom in either tourism or business here. The person to ask is the Director of Finance and Legal Counsel at Heli Dubai, long established here. And of course, those that are vendors of great helicopter tours across the UAE. Larry Pence joins us live on the phone this morning. Morning, Larry.
Hi, Tom. Hi, how are you? I enjoy your show.
Good to have you join us as well. And let's put that theory to you, Larry. Are there more helicopters in the skies of Dubai at the moment?
I think there are. You know, I think we have gone through some rough times. It has been an interesting period. But, you know, what I've always admired about Dubai is that, you know, when the things got a little bit tough, Dubai Tourism, Emirates, we do a lot of work as a tourism operation with the hotels. I think everybody picked up the ball and, you know, got into marketing Dubai as a destination. It was open, safe and secure, very responsible. And so people did come here. And I think it has been a great job over the last 2 years to market Dubai as a destination. And it's odd, as I was going through, some notes, I went back to my, you know, June 2021, you know, who flies on Heli Dubai. And believe it or not, almost every month from June or July before Expo, I had over 80 different countries flying, you know, on our helicopters. So people were coming. You know, tourism was picking up. I think you probably felt and heard that, you know, hotels are packed and things along that line. And I've tried to pick up my game, and believe it or not, I'm full. I'm very, very at capacity. I wish I had more helicopters, but helicopters in the air is an indication that Dubai did a good job, and I think that we've established ourselves as a destination, and I see nothing but good times ahead. Actually,
you mentioned capacity there, Larry. What is capacity? What's the fleet look like at the moment?
Yeah, we have 4 helicopters and others if we want to. But Heli Dubai actually has a number of divisions. We do obviously charters. We do aerial filming. We've done all the movies here from Mission Impossible to Star Trek, Star Wars, Fast and Furious 7. So we do have a strong aerial filming fleet that can convert into passenger carriers. But for the tourism operation, we have 4 helicopters, and they're basically at full capacity right now.
What sort of trends are you seeing in those bookings at present?
Well, we had, in February of 22, we had the biggest month ever. Mm. And it's been just going like that. Even last summer, before Expo, we had our best summer, you know, season ever. But as far as the trends, I think if everybody now continues to market, we've made some changes in our market strategies over the years. But I think we've built a strong base amongst all the people in the tourism industry to get people to come to Dubai. So trends, I see nothing as positive.
Seen a boost in luxury travel, or certainly luxury options when it comes to charter flights and people getting from A to B as well. Is that something that you're seeing as well? If people are over here on holiday, they're a bit more likely to indulge themselves with maybe a helicopter tour of Dubai.
Well, I think there's two things. Charters. We, you know, have our heliport just across the street from all of the Emirates, on Umm Al Sequin, from, you know, just very close to Burj Al Arab. And, you know, charters is not exactly our strongest market. Definitely our aerial tours is the strongest market right now. We offer a selection of tours from 12 minutes to 40 minutes, and they're very affordable, and I think people are deciding that, yeah, take a helicopter tour. It's once in a lifetime, and it's a great experience.
Given your experience in the market, Larry, is there more potential for charters here in Dubai compared to other major cities around the world?
Well, charters always define that you're going from one place to the other. Obviously, when we do charters, our main marketplace is basically to Abu Dhabi. But, you know, again, I think when people come to Dubai, I don't know, we do have a product to pick people up at the airport and then take them to places like Burj Al Arab, you know, that kind of charter operation. But I think when people come to Dubai, they want to enjoy the hotels, enjoy the various attractions, golf, go to the beach. And hey, you know, doing a helicopter ride is once in a lifetime. And I think that's pretty well how I see the market. Not a strong chartering market, but I see a strong kind of, yes, luxury experience type of thing. But, you know, helicopter tours aren't that expensive. It depends on what you're wanting, actually.
In terms of sort of, I mean, give us a price if you can for those getting ready for an Eid break at the moment. What would it set you back to go for an average tour of Dubai?
Our 12-minute tour starts at 650 dirhams per seat, and we go up to like 30-minute tours at 1,600 dirhams a seat. Believe it or not, 12. We obviously have 12 minutes, 17 minutes, 22 minutes, 30 minutes. You know, a 12-minute tour is actually quite excellent. Mm. And from our heliport at Al Sequin, you lift up. There you see the the Palm Jumeirah. You see the Burj Al Arab. You see a lot. Mm. And the thing is that it's not only that, it's also the experience. you know, the takeoff, the landing, seeing, you know, a city from 1,500 feet. It's, you know, you can take a tour bus if you want to, but when you see, you know, something like beautiful Dubai, you see it from 1,500 feet, totally different perspective.
Good to hear that the beginning of the year has been good. The rest of the year looking good as well. About 30 seconds left with the year out. Larry, what's the rest of 2022 look like?
No, we're packed. And I think when I talked to some very excellent hotels just yesterday, we're packed. And I think Dubai's done a fantastic job to market itself as a destination. And I think it's going to get nothing but better.
Good on you, Larry. Really appreciate your time. Thanks for flying high with us this morning. Larry Pence there, Director of Finance and Legal Counsel at Heli Dubai. Been in a helicopter, Rich?
I have. I did a helicopter. I've done one here and I did one in the Grand Canyon. You?
Yeah, I did. It's about a year ago now. Do you remember? I did that one when I had to go from the show to the Heli Dubai launch pad, got in a police helicopter and went up to Ras Al Khaimah to film a SWAT documentary.
I don't remember that. But is it available online? I would like to watch it.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.